people can be very conscious of the energy that they use. One thing the average homeowner can do is get an energy audit, figure out what things can be done cost-effectively to reduce their energy consumption. There are things like roof attic, roof insulation, attic insulation that make a lot of sense. Certainly, turning down your thermostat using a programmable thermostat can make a big difference in terms of the energy you use when you get to work. Certainly, to ride your bike more, to take public transportation. The next time you purchase a car, you know, look for one that is fuel efficient. Those are the kinds of things that we can all do to reduce our energy use. Even the foods we choose can have an impact on greenhouse gas emissions. But ultimately, in spite of the fact that these are all good things to do, this is a big problem, and it is going to require a change in how we use energy on a bigger scale in terms of how we produce electricity.
Now, you are an engineer at NREL in Golden, one of the major institutions doing research into energy. What are your thoughts on where we are right now as a country and as a state, if we bring it back locally to Colorado, with regarding alternative energies?
Mm-hmm. Well, Colorado is a great state for renewable energy. We were actually the very first state in the country to have a citizens' initiative come up with what's called a renewable portfolio standard, where a certain percentage of our electricity needs to come from renewable energy, and we're up to 30% now. So that's great. We also have excellent resources in the state. We have over 2,000 megawatts of wind power. We have an excellent solar resource. And the other thing I'll say is that things are looking very encouraging in terms of this transition to renewable energy. If you look at new grid generation, new electricity that's coming on the grid, it is predominantly renewable energy. And so that's very encouraging. The issue, of course, is that we really need to convert over the existing energy infrastructure to carbon-free energy sources.
How difficult is it to do that conversion when we see how much money has been invested in energy plants for the extractive industries, the coal-burning power plants? I mean, do these need to be scrapped and we start again, or can there be conversion?
Well, the conversion is not going to occur overnight, for sure. But a number of studies have shown that renewable energy today is quite cost-effective. If you look at wind power, it's come down so much in price that it's very cost-competitive with fossil fuel. Photovoltaic cells that convert sunlight directly to electricity are reaching in many places what is called grid parity, where it's competitive with the grid. And you look at places like Germany that have made a very large-scale transition. They're doing very, very well economically. The other thing that we can do is if we bundle together energy efficiency with renewable energy, energy efficiency saves a lot of money. So actually, if you bundle the two together, you can save the economy a lot of money. The other thing you need to consider is what are called externalities, and that's the costs of using energy that aren't necessarily reflected in what the consumer pays. And when you look at the overall cost of energy on our health, for example, with air pollution, and you take those costs into account, switching over to carbon-free energy sources is very, very cost-effective for the economy. And then finally, you really have to look at the cost of not doing this transition. And that is that climate change itself is creating a lot of damage. There are numerous studies that show that we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars of damage to the economy when you look at all the effects of climate change. And so by making this energy transition, we're avoiding those costs, and that needs to be calculated in the equation.
With regard to where we are at right now with climate change, we're seeing very, very concrete effects of changing climate right now. If we look at right here locally, March, typically the snowiest month, we saw that in February. A lot of climate scientists are saying we're seeing kind of seasons moving back, coming earlier. We're seeing climate chaos in many ways. Is it too late to reverse that, or do we just have to now adjust to this new reality?
It's really a combination. It's a combination of adjusting to the changes that are happening now and preventing even far worse changes from happening in the future. And you're right. We are starting to see the effects of climate change now. I think, you know, as recently as 5 or 10 years ago, people were worried about the future in terms of climate change. And we realize now that there are changes already happening. We're seeing increased extreme precipitation events, increased severe droughts, greater frequency of serious heat waves, coastal flooding. Those are some of the things we're seeing, more wildfires that are covering more land. We're seeing all these impacts. You know, by increasing the carbon dioxide content of the atmosphere by over 40%, what we've done is we've raised the average temperature of the Earth about 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit. But that's not uniform. And so what we're seeing now is we've raised the temperature in the Arctic. It's called Arctic amplification. We've raised that temperature a lot more than the average. And so by changing the temperature distribution, that's clearly having impacts on weather patterns. And so you will see articles in the scientific literature that are now raising the possibility that the severe drought we're seeing in California is linked to what's happening to the weather as a result of this change in temperature distribution.